To be a winemaker, you need to be a little bit crazy.
Pinot Noir, it's not going to knock your socks off, but it's going to seduce you. It's going to slip your socks off.
When you've got the basic fruit intensity in the wine itself, they're the wines that are going to age very well.
For my family, Moscato is in our DNA.
It is only Barbera, this wine. Why it is so expensive? Because it's very good wine.
We make a white Barbera, which is called Carica l'Asino, which, by the way, means load the donkey, and we don't know why.
We say, so drink the wine. That's kind of our motto here at Life Between the Vines. One of the cool things about wine, besides drinking it, is the people you drink it with. And the stories you hear and tell with wine all come together to make every bottle unique. Discovering and tasting wine shouldn't be a homework assignment. And we believe that the people who are closest to wine have the best stories. So open a bottle.
And welcome to podcast number 270. This week we feature Willamette Valley, the Pinot Noir Auction 2018.
It's amazing. This is number 3. Amazing. So thank you to all of you.
The magic of Willamette Valley wine is known as Pinot Noir. This beautiful part of Oregon produces some of the world's finest pinots. This was our first trip to the Willamette Valley to see the wineries firsthand and to document the Pinot Noir auction. In its third year, this auction brought in $800,000. Previous to the auction, many winemakers were concerned if their lots would do as well as 2017. They had nothing to worry about. The auction exceeded last year by 56%. We conducted brief interviews with 26 winemakers during the barrel tasting just before the auction. Willamette Valley Wine. This is where passion reigns. As many of you know, the reason we do this podcast is because winemakers are really interesting people. So before the auction, we asked the winemakers, what did you do for a living before you became a winemaker?
I was a hydrogeologist working for a Shell oil company.
I was in the investment business for 20 years.
Partying and whatever. I was really into skateboarding and punk rock.
The bicycle mechanic.
And I was a semiconductor engineer.
I was a geologist.
Well, oddly enough, we had restaurants.
I was a pre-dental surfing major at Long Beach State.
And I actually spent 16 and a half years working at Intel.
Practicing attorney.
I used to work in restaurants.
The local government world.
I was a college student.
Plant breeder.
I was an aspiring academic.
I was working in book publishing.
Actually, a woodworker.
In all honesty, I wanted to be a brewer.
I think I speak for a lot of us that have tasted those wines. I've just been blown away by the quality of what all the winemakers here have put in front of you for this weekend. So cheers to all of you.
I'm with Mary Jo Lee.
I'm the key account specialist for national sales.
Okay, so tell me, what exactly is that?
I work with our distributors in the southeast portion of the United States as well as California.
And how long have you been in the wine business?
I've been in the wine business since 2001.
So you're just kind of helping out pouring today, or?
I do a lot of events, special events for Willamette Valley Vineyards, normally across the United States, but now and then I get asked to fill in here in Oregon.
And you're smiling when you say that, so that must be something you like to do when you're in your own home backyard.
I do. I have an acre on the Willamette River. I'm an Oregonian, so I miss home when I'm traveling.
Yeah, I bet you do. It's a beautiful area. So you were pouring a sparkling wine for me. Why don't you tell me about the wine you're pouring?
I'm pouring our Brut sparkling wine. It is about 65% Pinot Noir and Chardonnay blend. It's done in Champenois, made by... fermented by our winemaker, Joe Ibrahim, at our main facility. And then it goes into the dosage through Andrew Davis with Radiant Wine Company.
And Andrew Davis is working with quite a few winemakers to bring sparkling wine, or to continue sparkling wine here in Willamette, right?
Yeah, I think he is. He's the end all with sparkling wine in Oregon right now.
Let me ask you about that idea of sparkling wine coming from Oregon, promoting it. Are you finding acceptance for it right now? Is it more of a challenge for you?
No, I think that people are very open to appreciating anything that we're doing in the Willamette Valley as far as in comparison to France. You know, we do Pinot Noir and Chardonnay beautifully here in the Willamette Valley, so there's no reason why we can't be making some very serious sparkling wines.
You have the ingredients, Chardonnay and Pinot.
We do. So, and we do it well, so there's no reason why we can't be making some very exceptional products.
Excellent. So for our listeners, if they want to be able to find out a little bit about you online, how would they do that? Is there a website they could go to?
Absolutely. It's WVV.com. It's Willamette Valley Vineyards, and we have a lot of information on our website, as well as our main tasting room hours and the wines that we carry there.
This particular sparkling wine, what area of the valley did the grapes come from?
Our main estate is located in the mid-Willamette Valley in the South Salem Hills, which is soon to be a new sub-AVA of Willamette Valley. We have 55 acres planted in vine there back in 1983. Jim Bruneau planted that vineyard site and started his company.
How many AVAs are there here in the Willamette Valley, or sub-AVAs, I guess you'd say?
There's currently, I believe, 5 sub-AVAs, soon to be, I think there's 4 new ones on the horizon.
Mary, thanks very much for your time.
Thank you.
I'm here with Eric Kramer. He's a winemaker for Willa Kenzie Estate. Did I get that right?
You got it right, yes.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing splendid. How about yourself?
No complaints. You know, here, drinking wine, sampling, this is a lot of fun. So, do we have the wines you have here at the table? Are any of these part of the auction itself, the auction lots?
Yes, we absolutely have our auction lot wine here right now.
Tell me about your auction lots, please.
So the Willa Kenzie Estate, one of the things that I love about it, it's just this really cool kind of diverse property with one kind of bench that does one thing, or a south-facing ridgeline that does another. It's a 425-acre estate in total with just over 100 acres under vine, and the majority of it is planted to Pinot Noir. But it expresses itself very, very differently depending on where you are on the property. Our auction lot wine today comes from this really unique and interesting kind of flat kind of benchtop piece near the upper reaches of the property, situated at about 650 feet. It's a single barrel, single clone selection, clone 667 of Pinot Noir. Lovely kind of expression off of the property with some great, just cool features from Pinot Noir, very representative of the 2016 vintage.
How would you describe in a simple sentence what makes Oregon wine special?
Oregon wine, if I'm talking about Pinot Noir, in some ways captures the best of both worlds with respect to what Pinot can be in terms of both fruit and non-fruit-like characters, whether those are spice-driven characters or fruit-driven. You get elements of both. It offers a lot in terms of just fruit intensity and freshness. But the viticulture and the growing regime here is such that it doesn't get too ripe. It gets ripe enough. And the wines maintain just this high degree of freshness, great finesse, great balance. They're just terrific. It's a terrific place to be a wine grower for a Pinot Noir.
This particular wine we're just talking about for your auction lot, what sub-AVA does that come from?
Yamhill Carlton AVA.
And if our listeners want to learn a little bit about you and your winery, how would they know that?
www.willakenzie.com.
It's a real pleasure meeting you. Thank you, Eric.
Yeah, my pleasure as well. Yeah, thank you for your time.
Should I try your wine, please?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I'm here with John Patacoli of Red Hawk Vineyards. How are you doing, John?
I'm doing fine, thanks. How are you?
Good. This is my first time to Oregon, and I'm just loving the wines here. So tell me, what do you think sets Oregon apart from other wines in this country?
Well, I think that our climate is perfect for growing Pinot Noir. Our cool climate lets us create elegant but powerful wines, and there's no place else in America that I think Pinot is expressed in that way.
They're very special wines here, especially compared to other areas. Not that I want to get into comparisons, but for my tastes, they really impress me. And this area's been making wine for only 50 years, is that right?
Roughly 50 years, yes.
You guys have come a long way in a short period of time, comparatively speaking.
We've come a long way in the last 20 years.
Yeah, no, that's pretty cool. How long have you been making wine?
Since 05.
What did you do before you made wine?
I was in the investment business for 20 years. It was a dream to own a winery and become a winemaker. So my wife and I quit our jobs and bought a winery 13 years ago.
About how many cases do you do?
6,000.
So that's a respectable size for a small winery.
In Oregon, we're not among the smallest, but if we were in California, we'd be tiny.
Yeah. A lot of tiny wineries make some great wine.
That's true. And I think last statistic I saw, 81% of the wineries in Oregon make less than 5,000 cases.
Wow. You know, is it fair to say that a lot of these wineries, at least at this time, are more family-owned than not?
Yes, and that's one of the things I think that separates Oregon a little bit when you go wine tasting versus other areas in the United States, is that a lot of the times, you know, one of us is there, owner, winemaker, general manager. You're going to see them in the tasting room and you get a chance to converse with them, which, you know, in big, gigantic wineries, a lot of times you don't get that opportunity.
What sub AVA is your wine from?
We're in the Ole Amity Hills.
Are you pouring an auction lot wine today?
We are, yes.
What is that wine?
It is a Pinot Noir that's about two-thirds our estate fruit and one-third fruit from Zenith Vineyard. Both we typically just bottle separately, and this is the only time we blend those two vineyards is for this auction.
John, for our listeners who'd like to learn about you online, how would they do that? What's your website?
RedHawkWine.com.
Great. Did you have a tasting room?
Yes, open every day, all year.
John, it was a pleasure meeting you. Thank you.
You too, Ray. Thank you.
Cheers. So I'll walk you through all the wine tastings today here at Stoller. I run into our old friend, Ryan Zapaltis, who was one of our earliest interviews way back in our early days. Ryan, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Good to see you, Ray.
It's good to see you. This is fun because I wasn't there for the interview. You did it with my partner at the time. So we'd never actually met other than maybe I think I set it up, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, probably met through email.
So you're making wine for Siduri these days, right?
Yep. So I think 20 vintages now for Siduri. Yeah, throughout my time, worked on many projects, but I've always worked for Siduri since 2000, actually, first vintage.
So when I said these days, I mean pretty much for your career.
Pretty much, yeah.
How long have you been a winemaker?
I started in 1998, first vintage, moved out to California from the state of Wisconsin. Knew nothing about wine, but quickly fell in love with the process when I was digging out tanks like this behind me on my first vintage. My first job was at a winery called La Crema at the time. And I met the cellar master at a wedding of all places. And he said, come work for me. It sucks, but you'll make a lot of money. Turned out it didn't suck. I actually really loved it and was smitten with Pinot Noir and Chardonnay from the very beginning. So.
Yeah, I remember your Pinot. Very good Pinot, too. Tell me about your auction lot you're pouring today.
So today we're pouring, I'll show you here, our 2016 Sin Pantalones. So the joke there is no pants. This particular lot comes from one of our favorite blocks at the Grand Moraine Vineyard. It's Pommard clone. And this particular lot was 100% whole cluster fermentation. So because of its 100% whole clusterness, it's just dumped in a small tank and it's just like a pile of rocks at first. So in order to get some juice out of the grapes and to get it fermentable, we had to get in there with no pants and stomp it around. So Adam Lee, the founder of Siduri Wines, he was the one that was jumping in the tank the first week when he was up here during harvest, and he made it a point to be in his tidy whities, shocking the world, or the cellar at least, up here. And as a joke on him, I called it Sin Pantalones. But what I really love about this, 100% whole cluster, brings out an exotic kind of flavor profile. It actually sort of tastes like you poured some Fernet or something in here. So it's a really like herbaceous on top of like the deep fruit here. So a big, juicy, soft-shouldered wine, but very like low in alcohol and very, very soft. We mess with whole cluster quite a bit in Pinot Noir, but usually it's a 30%, 50% maybe on small batches, and then we use that at the blending table. But this particular bottling is 100% all in. So we had some extra fruit to play with. We filled up a 5-ton fermenter of destemmed, and we had a little bit left over. So we picked a small fermenter and just said, screw it, let's just all put it in there as 100% whole cluster.
Very cool. Well, I hope you do good with your auction lot. Tell me, for our listeners who want to learn about you, what is your website?
www.siduri.com. That's S-I-D-U-R-I.
Brian, this was really great running into you. A lot of fun chatting with you again. Thanks very much, and I hope you have a good day.
Thanks, Ray. Good to see you.
So during our trip here to Oregon, we've been able to interview a number of winemakers, and one we just spoke to yesterday is Alex Sokolblasser of Sokolblasser Winery. How are you doing, Alex?
I'm doing great. We're here at Stoller, and it's been a lot of fun.
It's a lot of fun. This is nice to see so many people out here. It's nice to see so many people discovering Oregon wines. If you were to kind of put that into a sentence or two, what do you think makes Oregon wine so very special?
It's definitely the people. I think the climate that we have here is challenging to grow and ripen Pinot Noir in. So you need people who are a little bit more humble, also good sense of humor. And I think those two things always make a tasting in Oregon that much more fun. The climate is very conducive to growing world-class quality Pinot Noir, but it's the people, I think, that make it special.
Well, you know, it's funny, as we look out the window, I can even see blue sky trying to creep out as opposed to the rain we've been having.
And that is, you're in springtime in Oregon, so it'll be shower upon sunbreak. And so, yes, I am actually looking out the window and I see one speck of blue sky, which I'm a little jealous of right now, but that's all right.
And the auction itself, just tell me a little, give me a little bit of an idea. What kind of bidders are you getting? What kind of people buy these wines?
So these are mostly for, you know, retail groups or restaurant groups will come in here and buy something very special that they can offer to their best clients. So these are, you know, very limited 5K slots that only that restaurant or that retailer will have to offer to their top clients. So that's who's bidding. This is not open to the public. This is really a restaurant group or retail organization that'll come and bid on the products.
How many years have you been doing this auction?
This is the third year. So, and every year gets a little bit bigger and better and a little bit more exciting. So, yeah, we got some good bidders this year. So,
who benefits from the auction then?
This is a benefit for ourselves. This is a benefit for our association, which is the Willamette Valley Winers Association. And because we don't, as an association, have a really good way besides a little bit of dues, and since we're really cheap, we don't have a lot of dues to pay. But this really allows us to help us market and tell our story about Oregon around the world.
For our listeners who want to learn about Sokolblasser online, your website, how would they do that?
Sokolblasser.com, very easy.
Thank you for your hospitality the other day, and it was really good to meet you face-to-face finally.
Ray, it was my pleasure. It was fun to meet you, too.
Thank you. I'm here with Tony Reinders, and the winery you own is called Tendril, right?
Tendril Wine Cellars, yes. And as a matter of fact, I have a second brand that we started recently called Child's Play.
Tony, what did you do before you became a winemaker?
Before I became a winemaker for the first time?
Yeah.
I had a brief stint working at a food company, but it only lasted 3 years out of college. So I've been a winemaker most of my life.
Which would be about how many years?
More than 20 years, pushing 25.
Cool. And has it all been here in Oregon?
No, I actually started making wine in California. Then I wound up doing some overseas experiences. And then I've spent probably the last almost 20 years, 18 years here in Oregon. I've also worked in Washington, so throughout the Pacific Northwest.
But all these other projects, this is the first one that's your project that you're with your name on it?
Yes, 10 years ago, in 2008, I actually left to Main Serene, where I'd been the head winemaker for 10 years. And so I started Tendril back in 2008. And then just a few years ago, in 2014, we added Child's Play, that brand, to the lineup as well.
Well, let's go with Tendril first. Where did you come up with the name?
So Tendril is actually a part of the grape plant. So it's how the plant actually attaches to the grapevine itself and pulls the shoots up. And so what I was looking for was a one-word term, not unlike how restaurants are oftentimes named here recently, that captures kind of in one word the main focus for what's important for making wine, in my opinion, which is it's really all about the vineyard, it's all about the grapes. So we're paying homage to the grapevine by naming our brand Tendril.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And Child's Play?
Yeah, so Child's Play, it's a reflection, I guess, of one of my personal bents, which is the double entendre. And so I love double meaning terms. And so Child's Play is a combination. So here on this label, you can see that there's some very pretty colorful artwork. We have four offerings in the Child's Play lineup, each one of them being a different offering and capitalizing or I say highlighting a different piece of art. So my two young daughters are the artists, and so it's them playing around, and then as winemakers we have an opportunity to play around as well. So that's kind of the double meaning behind Child's Play.
How old are your daughters?
My oldest daughter is 13 and my youngest is 7.
So perfect age for them making wine labels.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, actually they started when my 13-year-old was 5 and 6 years old. She's a very prolific young artist. And my now 7-year-old, she's actually, this label here, she did when she was 6, as a matter of fact. Yeah.
Oh, that's cute.
Which is cool. Yeah.
I think it's a great idea.
Yeah, thank
you. I like that.
Yeah.
What is it that drew you to Oregon, or what do you think makes Oregon wine special?
I mean, it's kind of a long answer, to be honest with you. You know, I feel fortunate that my winemaking path crossed Oregon relatively early on. And while I wouldn't, 20 years ago, let's say, have labeled myself as a Pinot Noir winemaker, I've developed a very strong relationship with that grape variety, which is the main grape that's grown here in the Willamette Valley. And I can tell you that beyond forming a relationship with Pinot Noir and a strong, you know, sense of appreciation for its flexibility, you know, with Tendril, for example, we now have 5 offerings in the lineup that show a very broad range of styles of Pinot Noir. And that's really our highlight and focus. It's literally a 5-course meal of Pinot Noir. But importantly, I guess what I would say is that we chose wisely here as a region as far as that grape variety being in the Willamette Valley in addition to Chardonnay. They're grapes that work really well here under our growing conditions. And we make very distinctive wines here. So our wines aren't reminiscent of California Pinot Noirs. And they're really not at all related to Burgundy. And so that's actually a very good thing for us, so that we have wines that have typically a bit more fruit presence, or they're more forward than, say, a lot of Burgundies. And they're usually more fresh and vibrant than a lot of the California offerings. So having Oregon be its own very distinctive region, or the Willamette Valley more specifically, is absolutely critical to our success here.
And for our listeners who'd like to learn about you online, what is your website?
So our website, you would go to www.tendrilwines.com. That's TENDRILWINES.com.
Very cool. Tony, this is a lot of fun talking to you. Thank you.
Yeah, go Bucks.
I'm here with Gina Hennen. And Gina, you're the winemaker at Adelsheim, correct? Did I pronounce that right?
Adelsheim.
I came really close. About how many cases do you guys do?
We do 40 to 45,000 cases a year, depending on the vintage.
And how long have you been winemaker there?
Winemaker only since the beginning of this year, but I've worked there for 11 years.
Well, it's about time you became the winemaker after all that time.
Yeah.
Tell me about your auction lot you have today.
Our auction lot is called the Roadblocks, and it comes from 2 different blocks that run alongside Calkins Lane, which is the vineyard property surrounding the winery itself. This is our 3rd planting, David's 3rd vineyard, for the 3rd auction. And they're typically our 2 favorite blocks. We make a single vineyard Calkins Lane every year, but traditionally there have been more blocks that have been blended in to make a larger volume of wine. This is the first time we get to keep them on their own. So it's kind of exciting to see how they came together and how they'll age over time.
Pretty cool.
Yeah.
Do you feel a lot of pressure when you have to make something like this as an auction lot? I mean, it has to be special, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think all of our wines have to be special. And that starts from a $30 Willamette Valley Pinot Noir, which is how most people are introduced to us for the first time. I mean, that is in some ways the highest bar, because we want to make sure people come back and start looking at more of our wines and potentially more expensive wines. So, you know, it's sort of a top to bottom thing. It's all about over delivering for the price point, no matter what that price point is.
Gina, before you became a winemaker, what did you do for a living, or what were you studying, one or the other?
I studied chemistry, and then I was a semiconductor engineer for several years and decided I did not want to do that for several more years, so I went back to school for a winemaking degree and just started working in the industry.
Were you already a wine geek by that time?
You know, I wasn't. It was more about the production. I drank wine. I learned more about it and thought that it might be a really good sort of cross-section of science and the making of something, the artisanship of making something.
It's amazing some of the backgrounds that people like you come from. It's very diverse, but it does tend to be medical or science or chemistry or something like that, doesn't it?
It underpins winemaking. I mean, as floofy as we want to be about the magic of winemaking, you still need to know basic chemistry. You know, that's what you're doing. The fermentation is a critical part of winemaking, and you have to understand how it all happens and how you can avoid potential mistakes and how you can make it as positive, as good as it can be.
I love how your face lights up when you talk about that. I don't know if you realize that, but you go from one to the other all of a sudden. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, I chose the right career.
You did choose a great career. The wine for the auction, does it come from a specific sub-AVA?
It does. It's from the Chehalem Mountains, which is our home AVA. It's where we first planted our first vineyard and had the first winery. So it sort of harkens to our home in that part of the world.
And of course, you guys have a tasting room here. It's not necessarily by appointment, right?
Correct. It's open nearly every day. Closed on the major holidays, but every other day we're open. Yeah.
And for our listeners who'd like to learn a little bit more about you, what would your website be?
It's adelsheim.com.
Excellent. Thanks very much. I appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you.
Pronounced Hennin?
Hennin.
Hennin. Okay. I got you on camera. I'm here with Gina Hennin. And Gina, you're the winemaker at Adelsheim, correct? Did I pronounce that right?
Adelsheim.
I came really close, and I've seen the name a million times. I just had some the other night, in fact, for Easter. Very good wines and very popular wines. About how many cases do you guys do?
We do 40 to 45,000 cases a year, depending on the vintage.
And how long have you been winemaker there?
Winemaker only since the beginning of this year, but I've worked there for 11 years.
Well, it's about time you became the winemaker after all that time.
Yeah.
I'm going to ask you to wait till I hold the microphone in front of you before you talk so I don't lose what you're saying.
Okay.
Because everything you say is important to me. Tell me about your auction lot you have today.
Our auction lot is called the Roadblocks, and it comes from two different blocks that run alongside Calkins Lane, which is the vineyard property surrounding the winery itself. This is our third planting, David's third vineyard, for the third auction. And they're typically our two favorite blocks. We make a single vineyard Calkins Lane every year, but traditionally there have been more blocks that have been blended in to make a larger volume of wine. This is the first time we get to keep them on their own. So it's kind of exciting to see how they came together and how they'll age over time.
Pretty cool.
Yeah.
Do you feel a lot of pressure when you have to make something like this as an auction lot? I mean, it has to be special, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think all of our wines have to be special. And that starts from a $30 Willamette Valley Pinot Noir, which is how most people are introduced to us for the first time. I mean, that is in some ways the highest bar, because we want to make sure people come back and start looking at more of our wines and potentially more expensive wines. So, you know, it's sort of a top to bottom thing. It's all about over delivering for the price point, no matter what that price point is.
Gina, before you became a winemaker, what did you do for a living, or what were you studying, one or the other?
I studied chemistry, and then I was a semiconductor engineer for several years and decided I did not want to do that for several more years, so I went back to school for a winemaking degree and just started working in the industry.
Were you already a wine geek by that time?
You know, I wasn't. It was more about the production. I drank wine. I learned more about it and thought that it might be a really good sort of cross-section of science and the making of something, the artisanship of making something.
It's amazing some of the backgrounds that people like you come from. It's very diverse, but it does tend to be medical or science or chemistry or something like that, doesn't it?
It underpins winemaking. I mean, as floofy as we want to be about the magic of winemaking, you still need to know basic chemistry. You know, that's what you're doing. The fermentation is a critical part of winemaking, and you have to understand how it all happens and how you can avoid potential mistakes and how you can make it as positive, as good as it can be.
I love how your face lights up when you talk about that. I don't know if you realize that, but you go from one to the other all of a sudden. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. I chose the right career.
You did choose a great career. Were you a winemaker anywhere else before here? I mean, I know you said you became a winemaker after being here a number of years, but have you done that before?
No, I had not been a winemaker. I worked for another winery prior to Adelsheim.
Cool. And for our listeners, I'm sorry, one last question, I forgot. The wine for the auction, does it come from a specific sub-ABA? The wine for the auction, does it come from a specific sub-ABA?
It does. It's from the Chehalem Mountains, which is our home ABA. It's where we first planted our first vineyard and had the first winery. So it sort of harkens to our home in that part of the world.
And of course, you guys have a tasting room here, and that's anybody could go there anytime. It's not necessarily by appointment, right?
Correct. It's open nearly every day. Closed on the major holidays, but every other day we're open. Yeah.
And for our listeners who'd like to learn a little bit more about you, what would your website be?
It's adelsheim.com.
Excellent. Thanks very much. I appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you.
I'm here with Sheila Nicholas.
of
Anamkara Cellars.
How did you arrive at that name?
Anamkara is the Celtic words for soulmate or friend of my soul. And we called it Anamkara because we planted the vineyard ourselves. We live in the vineyard, and it's incredibly personal to us. So we had no idea that you could put a stick in the ground and out would come a miracle and wine at the end of it. And here we are. So it's very much part of us. And like I said, very personal.
And clearly you are Scottish.
Yeah, so the Scots and the Irish are good friends. It's all good.
What part of Scotland?
Fife, which is between Edinburgh and Dundee.
Ironically, not this Dundee, though.
This Dundee, well, no, exactly. So, yeah, it's beautiful out there. Very, not too much wine grown there. More like Scotch, obviously, but...
So did you ever think you'd become a winemaker?
Well, it's quite funny because you look back to, you know, high school and your career counselor, and at no point did anyone say, Sheila, when you grow up, you're going to move across the world and make wine in a place called Oregon. And you go, so it never happened.
And here you are. I'm curious, did you specifically choose Oregon, or was it just between Napa and Oregon or something like that?
Ooh, well, when we decided to grow wine, that was our original idea. We looked around the Napa Valley because that's where we lived and that's what we knew, but we didn't have whatever it was, $200,000 to buy an acre of Cabernet. You know, the pizzas weren't that good. So we came up to Oregon and absolutely loved it. I actually really love the weather because I like seasons. We have beautiful seasons. We have summers, we have winters, we have falls that are glorious, and springs. And we have rain, and we have water, and we have air. And it's a really good wine community, too. We all get along really well together.
Like Scotland, it's very green here.
It's very green, yeah. And lots of fresh air. I think that's the only way I can really describe it, which we didn't really seem to... get, I guess, as much of that in California.
The wines you're making, are they from one specific sub-AVA or are they from different ones?
Yes, all our wines are from the Chehalem Mountains, which is not far from here. And the Chehalem Mountains is approximately 100 square miles. Not all of it, obviously, is vineyard. But we have just one little part of that, and it's a site that when we saw it, it was an old walnut and plum orchard that was completely overgrown. And, you know, we'd hack our way through it and find an outhouse or something like that. And so we slowly converted that orchard into a vineyard. And every wine we've made has come from that vineyard, so it's all 100% our own. We did a lot of learning on the ground, a lot of trial and error, a lot of asking questions. And I think what was most enlightening is we learned the rhythm of the vineyard. And once you learn that and you live in it, you're totally immersed in the vineyard. You know, we drink the same water the vines drink, and our dogs play in there. And, you know, you just, you learn what it needs when it needs it. So we started off mainly as farmers. And then after a while, you know, you plant the grapes and you harvest them and you go like, I wonder what these would taste like. And before you know it, you're making your own wine. Yeah.
You sound very happy.
I do. I love it. Yeah. It's a lot of hard work. There's a lot of facets that you would not think. I like to tell people that it's not all about stomping grapes with your feet and going out to fabulous dinners every night. There's a lot more to it than that. And we don't do either. But yeah, there's nothing that beats sort of sitting on the deck at the end of the day and just watching the grapes grow.
A lot of satisfaction.
Yeah, that's what it's all about. It's like a little, you know, you realize what it's all about when you can sit there and just drink your own wine, watch the grapes, it's fun.
For our listeners who'd like to learn about you, do you have a website?
I do, it's www.anamkaracellars.com.
Excellent, thank you very much for taking the time.
It was fun, thanks for coming by.
I'm here with Craig Williams, and Craig is the chief wine grower for Archery Summit. How are you doing, Craig?
I'm doing great, Ray. Nice to be here. Good to see you.
Good to see you as well. I was just commenting to you a moment ago about the idea of being called a chief wine grower. Now, what exactly does that mean?
It just means that I hang out with a bunch of great winemakers and try to give them as much support as I can, both in the vineyard and at the winery.
So your job is to sort of oversee.
I oversee, encourage, and throw things against the wall to see what sticks.
So I guess there's a lot of grapes stuck on the wall of the winery somewhere.
It gets messy sometimes, exactly.
How long have you been with Archery Summit?
I've been with Archery Summit for about 4 years. Before that, I was in California, working in California, specifically in the Napa Valley.
Any winery you'd like to mention or no?
Joseph Phelps Vineyards. I worked there for quite some time and then joined the Crimson Wine Group back in January of 2015.
So let me ask you this. What did you do before you were a winemaker?
I was a pre-dental surfing major at Long Beach State. And that's a very, very special major. They only allow a few people in on that. And it was an awesome major. Problem was, it wasn't a great career path in terms of any financial reward.
Eating would be a big part of things in life.
Yes, and trying to find money to do the dental work. Exactly, go to dental school. I transitioned out of that major to actually UC Davis, where I went to the School of Viticulture and Enology, way back when.
So you've probably seen a heck of a lot of change in the business.
It's been tremendous, and tremendous change not only in California, but here as well in Oregon. There's a huge, I think, energy, vibrancy, exciting times with what's going on up here. I love this region. I love this area. It has so many tremendous attributes that come out into the wine in terms of just the fragrance and flavor that make the wine so compelling. It's really just a great place to be involved with.
Was it a very specific choice to come here?
It was, both for me personally and professionally. I actually have some little family vineyard as well. But I've been up here for, the last 20, 25 years. I've been participating in the IPNC as a consumer, which is great because that's how I've learned about Oregon, about Pinot Noir, just about the attributes that are so special and separate this region from everywhere else in North America. So it's been a great visit for me, and I just love the people, the area, the food scene in this greater area is tremendous.
Wouldn't you say a lot of people are just have been discovering this area for the last few years?
I agree. I think you're just seeing the tip of the iceberg, so to speak. I think a lot of people now are turning their gaze, if you will, to Oregon, the Willamette Valley in particular, and just seeing what's going on. And you look around the room, you're not seeing people my age. You're seeing a lot of young people that are bringing a lot of energy, passion to their craft, and you're really seeing just an explosion of wines and wine styles and quality that just continues to be pushed in the marketplace. So it's really exciting just to see and be around all of these folks.
For our listeners who'd like to learn about you and Archery Summit online, do you have a website?
Archery Summit does. It's archerysummit.com.
Greg, this has been fun talking to you. I appreciate you taking the time.
Likewise. Thank you so much. Appreciate it. And have a great time here. Enjoy yourself.
I'm working on that, believe me. I'm here with Beth Klinger, and Beth Klinger is the winemaker, amongst other things, at Dion Winery. Is that right?
Dion Vineyard, yes.
Beth, of course, has volunteered to be our opening drink of wine in the podcast, which we're very much appreciating. But seriously, Beth, tell me a little bit about how many cases you do for Dion.
We're making about 850 cases a year now, primarily Pinot Noir. We do a rosé, a Pinot Noir, and a couple others, Chardonnay and Pinot Gris, but primarily Pinot Noir.
Are you the owner as well?
Yes and no. It's family owned, family run. I married one of the owners. So
you married your way in.
Yes. Never marry a winemaker. You end up doing a lot of work.
As we've already discussed, because you've got three titles on your business card, and you mentioned that there probably are others.
There are lots. I thought my business card should just say everything else. I do it all.
So how long has Dion been around as a winery?
As a winery, 2007 was our first vintage. My husband started making wine. So he grew up in the vineyard. My in-laws planted the vineyard starting in the 70s. So we've been growing wine grapes for over 40 years, selling them to other people. We have grown to 60 acres of vines. My husband grew up in the vineyard, hanging birds' nets, planting grapes, picking them. He and his sister both fled. He went to the Naval Academy, actually, and spent 10 years in the Navy. And then he came home, wanted to work with his dad, and convinced him to start up a label. And so he started making wine in 2007. My husband and I met in 2010. At Indy Wine Fest, which is sadly defunct now, but then we spent all day together, and we went on a date after it, and he's looking at the wine list and says, it'd be wrong for a guy to order a glass of pink sparkling wine on the first date. And I said, only if he doesn't order the whole bottle. So that cemented it. We just finished our first sparkling release.
Very nice. And the rest is history.
Yeah. And then it turns out I'm really good at cleaning stuff, which makes me a good winemaker.
Yeah, I guess that would. That's a prerequisite, isn't it?
It is absolutely required. My favorite tool is my hot water pressure washer, Hotsy. She's my best. My bestie.
Your wine that you're making for the auction lot, is this coming from one specific AVA or is it different spots?
So we're in the Chehalem Mountains and we have 60 acres of vines, all Chehalem Mountain. We are all estate fruit. So we're only making about 850 cases and a 60 acre vineyard will do about 15,000. So we still sell most of the fruit to other wineries in the area, all of whom we love and we drink their wines too. But we're doing a small production for our own lot. So this is from vines planted in 1976. Wow. Hence, we named it Bicentennial. And it's 2016, makes them 40 years old. Self-rooted, dry-farmed. We are live-certified, so it's sustainably farmed as well. And we take 12 rows of this 100% Pommard fruit, the original plantings on the vineyards, and we love it. It's the best wine we make. So we did, for our auction lot, we narrowed it down from about 9 barrels to 4 for our old vines blend that we sell commercially. And for the auction lot, we took 2 of the best barrels of that 4, one new, one neutral, and blended those together for the auction lot.
Well, it sounds like you have a very definite focus, because there's a little bit of pressure when you're putting these together, isn't there?
Do I look nervous? Because I'm dying inside. This is my first auction, and I'm scared to death.
Oh, no. Actually, you look like you're very happy, and that's what it all meant.
So what I brought today to pour is 2010 and 2012 older versions of our auction lot to show them how well they age, and a cold year version and a warm year version. And 2010 is my personal favorite. Kevin, my husband, says I have to love all my children the same. I don't. 10 is my favorite. Although 16 is quickly coming up on that. It's a beautiful, beautiful vintage.
For our listeners who'd like to learn about you, do you have a website?
We do. DianeVineyard.com. Either with or without the S, they both work. We're on Facebook, Instagram. I post all kinds of great pictures on Instagram and Twitter. Occasionally, I'm funny.
Excellent. Thanks for talking. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
I'm here with Peter Shea of Shea Wine Cellars. How are you doing, Peter?
Doing well. How are you?
Good. Tell me a little bit about Shea Wine Cellars. How long have you been in business?
So our vineyard was originally planted in 1989. It was my parents that started the vineyard and then didn't start making wine under their own label until 96. So we slowly grew from there and still only use 25% of the fruit from Shea Vineyard for our own production. The rest we sell to about 20 different wineries.
About how many cases do you guys do?
Under our own label, it's about 5,500 a year. There's about 25,000 cases coming off of the vineyard each year.
Wow. So really, when it comes to planting the vineyard, your family was kind of almost a pioneer.
Yeah, I don't know if we would consider ourselves quite maybe on the far edge of the pioneering stage. A number of people came before us and sort of set the stage for us.
Your role, when I approached you, I was asking you, what exactly do you do? You're kind of, sounded like chief cook and bottle washer-ish kind of everything.
Right. Exactly. It's a family business. So it's me and my parents. We have a winemaker and a vineyard crew. But for the most part, we all wear a lot of hats. And whatever has to get done, we all participate in.
How many years have you done auction?
This is our second year at the auction.
And tell me about your auction lot.
So this is, we call it two blocks. It's from two blocks of the vineyard that we usually make small lot releases, individual releases out of, part Badensville, part Pommard, part Dijon 777 clone. So it's a really interesting release, a couple of our favorite blocks, so we're excited about it.
If I were to ask you what you did before you got into the wine business, was there something, or did you make an escape from the wine business before you became part of it?
No, I did not make an escape. I went off to college and didn't think I would come back and get into the family business. And originally, I was just going to spend 6 months in the winery when I was graduating, and ended up really enjoying it. And you know, as a teenager, I didn't learn a lot about wine itself. I learned how to wash barrels, and that doesn't inspire a great love of wine in anybody. So when I was coming back, I finally learned more about wine itself and really enjoyed the whole thing. And now I've been around for 6 years.
Excellent. Do you guys have a tasting room?
We're tasting by appointment. So it's in our winery, in our production facility, usually in the barrel room itself. So it's pretty small, like I said. Not a lot of employees or anything. If somebody really wants to see, where all the action happens, it's a good place to stop.
Small is good. I'm good with that. For our listeners who'd like to learn about you on the web, what's your website?
It's SheaWineCellars.com. And just to clarify, Shea is spelled S-H-E-A.
Excellent. Peter, nice meeting you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Tell each other.
That's all right. I'm with Andrew Kirtland and Steve Hendricks. Gentlemen, how are you doing today?
Good. Thank you very much, Ray.
It's a real pleasure to be here. This is my first event in Oregon. I've been a fan of Oregon wines for a long time, but this is really something to be in one area to taste all these. It's pretty impressive.
Well, thank you. 70 lots specifically made to celebrate the Willamette Valley, and so we're excited to share it with Oregon and the rest of the world.
Yeah, it's a great reflection on the collaborative nature of the Willamette Valley and the support that everyone gives to each other, so we're happy to be involved.
You know, the seminar yesterday was really well done. I don't know if you guys got to see it, but you really did get the sense of community. That's a big deal in wine, especially in an area like this that's been growing so fast.
I think it's fair to say that the philosophy here is that a rising tide floats all boats. And so it's a joy to be able to say, hey, I've got this problem, and reach out to someone else, and they'll have had the same problem and give you ideas on how to solve it. So that's really nice.
I think that's typical of a farm community, though, isn't it?
Absolutely, and I think, you know, growing grapes and making wine is a farming pursuit, but at the same time, you know, it's an intellectual pursuit and a scientific pursuit, and we get to come together at events like this and celebrate that.
Yeah, that's
and
very cool.
And here's the sensory pursuit, so.
Yeah, exactly. How long have you guys been in business?
Well, the vines in our vineyard, we purchased an existing vineyard, so it's old vines, 73 and 79. We've owned the winery since 2012. And Andrew, we brought on board in 2016. So thank goodness he and Eric Homaker are our new winemaking team.
Steve, what did you do before you became a winemaker?
Still a practicing attorney.
And Andrew, I'm guessing you've been a winemaker for a while?
I have been. I've been able to travel around the world and work here and for almost 7 years on and off. And been in Australia and New Zealand and France and met my wife through wine and making wine and traveling and seeing the world and getting to taste and drink and think about food and wine.
A lot of winemakers meet their wives through this business.
Yeah, and it was pretty random for us. She was actually just traveling through and stopped at a vineyard that I was working at in France, and one thing led to another and we stayed friends, and now we've been married for 4 years. So.
Excellent. Congratulations. One more question, then I'll let you go. Your auction lot today. Who'd like to tell me about that?
I would.
Yes.
So half of it is our old vine estate wine, and the other half is a story. And the story is that my great-great-grandfather and great-great-grandmother came to Oregon in 1843 and 1845. They homesteaded a parcel, which is just east of Carlton, a small town a couple of miles from here. And the road that goes through it is called Hendricks Road. So when I found a vineyard that had been planted within that homestead, Earl and Peggy Lumpkin were kind enough to sell me some grapes, so we were able to make wine for the first time from the soil that is my roots. And so half of this is from that vineyard called Timbalian Time, and the other is from our Ruby Old Vines. And so we're really excited about blending the old roots and the new roots, and that's why we call our lot Grafted Roots.
That's really amazing. That's some very serious history for this part of the country.
Yeah, the 1843 train, which my great-great-grandfather on, was really the first one to come out. From McMinnville, Tennessee, which is why McMinnville, Oregon, is named McMinnville.
So. I didn't know that. For our listeners who'd like to learn about you online, your website?
RubyVineyard.com. And it's Ruby Vineyard and Winery, and you can find our wines for sale there, as well as information about the project and the vineyard and a little bit of our history.
How many cases are you guys doing?
About 5,000.
So a nice, tidy, small size.
Exactly.
Gentlemen, a real pleasure meeting both of you. Thanks very much. Cheers.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Cheers to you, Ray.
This is the end of part one of podcast number 270. To listen to part two, go to lifebetweenthevines.com or visit iTunes.